Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com. for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.
Welcome to episode zero of the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast, an actual play podcast for extended tabletop RPGs. We're coming to you from London, England. I'm your host and game master, Alex Newell, and with me today are...
James Ross.
Bryn Monroe.
Ben Meredith.
Lydia Nicholas.
And it's our first ever recording!
Woo! Yes! Filmed in front of a live studio audience of us as well.
In an empty room.
Okay, so...
I'm still watching you.
If you want to skip straight to the story, you should probably be starting on episode one, because this is actually episode zero. It's the first of our sort of meta-casts. These are bonus episodes, talking about the mechanics of the game that we're playing, sort of how we made characters, levelling up, that kind of thing. So just to tell you a bit more about the game itself, we're playing the Pathfinder D20 system. For anyone who wants to know, that's based on the old 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons, but they kind of streamlined it and got rid of some of the kinks and the teething problems. It's open source, and it's available legally and totally above board at www.d20pfsrd.com. We'll include that in the link dumps.
We didn't need to kill that guy to get this.
Yeah, you told me this was illegal.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was illicit, underground, and exciting. Now I know that... Oh, right, well, I'm off to traffic some opium.
You're not supposed to be in character yet.
Anyway, yeah, the reason we're using that is, firstly, it's the system that I'm most familiar with. Because I'm GMing, I'm game mastering, it's useful for me to sort of... at least understand the system that I'm going to be using. That said, I'm probably going to be deferring to Bryn quite a lot, as I'd say he's the more experienced GM out of the two of us.
Marginally.
But you've played a lot more systems than I have, definitely.
That's probably true.
You'll both muddle along.
Oh, bless.
Let the record show that Bryn has 10 D20s in front of him arranged by size and colour.
Flanked by small metal men.
Yeah.
And that's true.
And one of the main reasons using Pathfinder is it's got a really broad scope. One of the benefits of the rules is they're a bit massive, but it covers pretty much most eventualities, and there's so many third-party systems that are still available for free online. I mean, I totally recommend that everyone buy the books, by the way, if you're listening. It's really, really like encouraging them to keep going with the open source stuff. So anytime that you can buy a book, please do. The reason we're doing the open source version is just so that like listeners at home can follow along and...
I have the core book, but my old flatmate stole it and moved to Paris.
But we love him. We love him. He's great.
I used to love him.
He makes lovely lovely macaroons.
Yeah, and I'm fat now, thanks to him.
Just so everyone knows as well, the story world is completely original. I made it myself.
Is it completely original? It's quite heavily based on the real world.
It is drawing a lot. It is drawing a lot from two things. One, the Eberron setting for Dungeons & Dragons 3.5. And also, yeah, reality is in there because I'm really bad at geography. Yeah. So I thought it'd be a good learning experience for me, you know, to base it in the real world. I might actually learn where things are. But what that means, though, is sort of from a mechanical standpoint, quite a lot of time I'm going to be reskinning things. So I'll be having a monster that's got all of its stats. But, you know, instead of it being like a dog, I'll say it is a weird feral human. I don't know. But as long as it sort of mechanically is the same, I can reskin it and it'll still be all right. But I'll always try and make sure I tell people what the monster is so they can look it up.
This is a dog, but purple.
Yeah, totally reskinned.
The only limits are your imagination. Purple dogs, blue dogs, guy.
This is crazy. It's crazy.
We like to have fun here.
You don't have to be mad to podcast here. But you got well, I've got a mug.
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
It's all right.
Meta joke in a meta podcast.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you're going to get meta, then this is definitely the podcast for it. Okay, so today we're covering character creation specifically, how we got to where we sort of did with the characters, so that when we start with episode one, we all know what we're doing, all know what our system is, what the rules are. For anyone who's not played an RPG before, and this is the first time you're listening, you're curious... Basically, how it works is that you're pretending to be your characters. You sort of improvise conversations and you play out scenes with one another, kind of informally because it's a tabletop. And any time that your character does something, so whether it's trying to like seduce a guard or you know fire a catapult or even just you know straight up hit something. Yeah, totally. Basically,
Bryn makes that noise.
Bryn makes that noise.
He's a very gifted.
And then he tells us what happens. What it is it's determined statistically. It's all randomised, but character creation is where we basically factor in the things that your character's good at by giving you modifiers. So that means when you roll that dice, you're getting a +2, a +3, whatever, and it's basically to reflect that you're good at something but can still mess it up. So with that in mind, I'm going to go around and get people to give a little brief introduction to what their character's name is and what they look like, starting with you, James.
So my character, Sir Bertram Bertie McGuffingham, he looks like a tall Hugh Laurie playing Bertie Wooster in the early 90s, Fried Laurie, Jeeves and Wooster, except taller and fatter and armoured like a tank.
Tell us a bit more about your armour.
Yeah, my character's armour, it's huge and incredibly flashy because Sir Bertram Bertie McGuffingham is an idiot and just went in to the armour show and was like, I want the best armour, please. And they totally saw him coming. So it's very much the sort of armour that he would wear if he were perhaps going clubbing. So the family crest of the McGuffingham family is the Maltese Falcon. See what I did there? Quite pleased with that. So the armour is a big falcon's head with big falcons everywhere. Falcons, falcons, falcons. And the falcon at the top has got red eyes that just, they don't have any real function. They sort of glow in the dark. Not enough to actually see by, but enough to be a nuisance. That's it. Big flashy armour. And it's all cunningly carved. It's very much like showroom armour.
Okay, cool. And Bryn, your character's name and what they look like?
So my character is called Hamid Salah Harun Al-Tahan, he is Egyptian, and he's a halfling. Mm-hmm. And these are both quite obvious traits. So he's, you know, he's got sort of golden brown skin. He's quite tall for a halfling. He's a lot less hairy than the average halfling. He is like very well manicured and very well put together. He wears, you know, he always wears a sort of a three-piece suit. And, you know, he's got very, very neat hair, always clean shaven. He's got sort of large brown eyes that have occasionally been described as soulful. Oh.
Genuinely, we have an artist for the podcast and she was asking for character descriptions and then I went, I'm really sorry, what? One of their eyes is soulful, and she goes, oh, it's always soulful, yes. Or pained, or distant.
I don't see a need to avoid stereotypes. I mean, you know, they can be useful.
For bigots.
Anti-soulful.
I think you do mean tropes.
Tropes. Yeah. When creating a character, it's nice to do some things that are... classic. It's nice to do some things that are unusual.
My dwarf has a beard.
So far, this doesn't exactly. sound like a character profile. This sounds like an online dating profile.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And Ben, your character's name and what they look like.
My character's name is Sulphur McEyes. He is a group.
He's a sentient eye golem.
No,
his pain is awful. He's a dwarven cleric.
Oh my god, he has a beard.
Yeah, he has a beard. Zolf Smith. He is from the West Country.
It is the funniest of the four countries. So carry on.
Yes, and how he looks. So he is a rather grizzled person, a salty sea dog, if you will, wearing sort of quite cheap off the peg sort of scale armor. He's wearing usually wears a sort of large wax kind of storm coat, not bright yellow, usually brown. He doesn't look like Paddington Bear. He could look like Paddington.
I totally showed it.
Blonde hair, green eyes, blonde sort of haystack hair. So not very dwarf, not ponytailed or anything like that, but just like a random haystack. Although his beard is sort of a pair of mutton chops that have got way out of hand, go right down his face, and they're like reverse pigtails. And I made sort
it's
of
like Boris Johnson's grandfather.
is your beard braided? Do you have a braided beard?
Yeah. Two braids down each, like, jowl, I suppose. wearing... So he's got a trident. That is a character.
Oh, yeah, it's totally a good thing.
He's always seen with his trident. And he's got a driftwood dolphin sort of...
Anything inconvenient below the waist?
Oh, yeah, he hasn't got a leg. I forgot about that. His left leg is missing.
Let's examine that a bit more. So I really like that choice, because I'm a big fan of not power gaming, which is where you sort of optimise your character a lot. And if there's one thing that giving yourself a peg leg is doing, it's not power gaming. And why is that, Ben?
Why is that? It's because you get a hell of a lot of penalties on things. You get... I'm limited to 10-foot speed, so running is not in my repertoire. I can totter rapidly, but not too rapidly.
It's a penalised stealth as well.
It might do. It's very hard to stealth when you're going... Hope that picks
is
up.
The first mission going to be obtaining a slipper? Is that
in episode one?
Padding the bottom.
I was going to say, in episode one, we fashion some kind of rudimentary moccasin for your peg leg.
Yes, it is a metal peg leg.
Oh, so it clangs.
Well, it's probably got like a little wooden foot, not like a foot, but a little like a rubber thing, but obviously
like cork,
not
or rubber.
Yeah, cork would probably be a decent thing.
Okay, so, Lyd, if you can tell us a bit more about your character's name and the way that they look.
My character's name is Sasha Rackett. Mm-hmm. She's a small, wiry woman with black hair, cut very short. She's mm-hmm. generally pretty agitated, so is always running her hand through her hair and it spikes up in all kinds of directions. In terms of what she looks like, you'll kind of realise that there's almost deliberately not much to notice. Lots of kind of dark... well-cut but unintrusive kind of clothes, okay. And a nice big leather jacket.
Kind of like social camouflage.
Yeah, you're going to find it hard. Description runs off her like water off a sort of unobtrusive duck's.
Bizarrely, your actual description of her is quite extensive and apt, given it's someone who you're basically saying it's really hard to describe her because she deliberately makes herself hard to describe.
Yeah, you might notice that the jacket and the clothes are more slightly well-cut mm-hmm. and well-fitted, but you'd only really notice if you focused hard, which would be hard to do because she doesn't draw much attention to herself and is generally sitting in shadowy corners.
Okay, cool. So that's just a bit of a lowdown on everyone's characters. Now we're going to go into a bit more about the mechanical detail of, you know, how we arrive at something that we can actually use in the game that reflects those characters. So with the Pathfinder system, again, if you go onto that d20pfsrd.com, they've got a really helpful page on character creation, which just runs through all the basic things. So the first thing that you need in most tabletops of the d20 system, six main ability scores, which are strength, dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. With strength being kind of obviously how strong you are, how hard you can hit, how heavy you can carry, things like climbing as well, things that have a good strength element. Dexterity, you know, how quick you are to dodge, rolling, acrobatics, that kind of thing. Constitution, you know, how hardy you are. Are you of a, you know, a northern stock who can withstand the cold, or like a desert tribe who are very good at the heat? You know, something that will determine how healthy you are, basically. intelligence, what it says on the tin. In this game system, it gives you more skill points, which are like specific skills that you're good at. But it's also how you approach a problem. Wisdom being the flip side of that coin, which is more intuitive experience. The way I've always had it described to me is intelligence is someone who can look at the sky and know it's going to rain. Wisdom is someone who knows to take an umbrella. One is experience-based, the other one is sort of more learned and academic. And then charisma is... A lot of people say it's likability of the character. I tend to think of it more as how good they are in social situations at getting things done. So sort of organising a team, if you're going to be a good leader.
Persuasiveness.
Yeah, persuasiveness. Also lying, things like that. Yeah. Basically, it's if you couldn't be a good leader and have bad charisma. You just couldn't.
I do like to think of it as pretty closely linked to physical attractiveness as well.
A lot of people do, and I totally understand it, because physical attractiveness is a quality. That said, I have had great games where someone's played someone ugly but just incredibly personable and likeable, which is kind of a nice subversion of that. There's a few ways you can go with it. So just going round, I set this as a high fantasy game according to Pathfinder, which is a 20-point buy system. The system's on there. They have a table that will automatically do it for you. What that means is you have a certain amount of points you can spend on your basic abilities, and then from that you can build your basic abilities. So just running around quickly, James, what are your basic ability scores?
Sure, I am Strength 16, Dexterity 12, Constitution 16, because I've eaten all the pies, Intelligence 12, Wisdom 8, because I thought it was a good idea to eat all the pies, and Charisma 13.
So yeah, basically what you've got there is a big bruiser who's actually quite sort of likeable and very, very healthy.
Cheery oaf.
Yeah, pretty much.
I fell over. No one's helping me up yet.
I mean, obviously, this is what comes first in like all the guides and stuff, but you want to know what you're aiming for. So we did actually sort of at least have a vague idea of what classes we were planning to become.
That's a good point.
Before we made the ability scores. So James was going to be a fighter of some kind. There's a bunch of different fighting kind of classes, but we knew that he was going to be that. Heading in that direction, so we prioritise strength and constitution.
Yeah, I mean, I'll certainly dedicate a bit of time towards it towards the end of the episode, but certainly it's always worth discussing with everyone what you all want to be doing before
Absolutely.
You build. For the love of everything, don't build it and then meet up and go, cool, I'm a fighter called Jeff and I'm a dwarf. Who are you? I'm a fighter called Clive and I'm a dwarf. Who are you? And it just goes on.
Clive is a great name for a dwarf.
Clive the dwarf. But like in all seriousness, you really do need to make sure that you sort of are compatible. So we spent a good amount of time making sure that like we're not treading on each other's toes, because inevitably one person's just by sort of luck of the draw ends up slightly better and then suddenly become the go-to guy and that other person's just kind of left. Plus, I mean, from a survivability standpoint, if everyone is a fighter, it's fine until someone falls down and then everyone just runs around not able to help them up, you know?
Why is hitting this wound with this plaster not helping?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've also sneak around the wound.
We've also got four people, and there's a very classic, you know, D20.
Oh, yeah.
Split when you've got four people in your party, you take a fighter, an arcane caster, a divine caster, and a rogue.
Pretty much, which
is what we did.
Yeah, it's become a trope for a reason. Yeah.
Again, stereotypes aren't necessarily bad. Yeah.
Okay,
I still think we should have gone with the original four druids plan.
that's just
the Pathfinder system cannot handle four druids at once. Things go wrong.
The druids. You can't handle the druids.
They can't. It really can't. Bryn, go over your scores for us.
Right. So I was going to be the arcane caster, and so I sort of chose to prioritize intelligence. But I also thought about being a sorcerer, so I looked at intelligence and charisma. So I ended up with strength of 8, dexterity of 15, constitution of 12, intelligence of 16, wisdom of 10. And charisma of 16. So the idea is I'm quite intelligent, quite personable, quite good looking.
Mm-hmm.
All these things.
Something that people will notice quite quickly is that even though we've got the sort of traditionally squishy characters, those are the ones who can't normally take a beating, things like arcane casters because they have less hit points
I'm
and things.
Oh, very squishy. Yeah.
That said, I always try to encourage people in Pathfinder to have a con score of at least about 12, just because there are a few nasty sort of traps and poisons out there which will just flat out kill you otherwise, with no real chance to save yourself. So if you're a very high dex character, like a rogue for instance, you can sometimes get, you can normally get away with it. But if you aren't sort of that hard to hit and easy at dodging and with a good reflex, you're going to want a little bit of a higher con, otherwise bad things can happen. Ben, on to yourself.
Yes, so as I said, playing a cleric, they run off constitution and wisdom.
Yeah, they
so
do.
I went high with those. See, I've got 12 strength, 11 dexterity, 16 constitution, 12 intelligence, 18 wisdom, and 8 charisma. Basically playing into dwarven strengths, who make very good clerics.
Yeah, they really do. They really do. And also, they always tend to be a bit gruff.
Yes.
Because the charisma always takes the hit.
It does always take the hit. Well, they get minus 2 to it. So.
Yeah, kind of. And Lyd, yourself?
Yeah, so I think pretty classic rogue. Mm-hmm. Strength 8, mm-hmm. Dex 17, con 12, int 16, wiz 14, and charisma a grand total of 8. So I'm very good at seeing and perceiving things, but not great at convincing people about what I've just noticed.
So this is the grumpy side of the table.
Yeah, we are.
And that's the flashy side.
Hello!
So the thing that's actually worth noting there is, obviously, with ability scores, the higher above 10 you are, basically the better you are than average. And it goes in multiples of 2, so you'll be getting a plus 1 modifier at say, a strength of 12, a plus 2 modifier at a strength of 14, and so on. You'll notice that there's a few 8s around the table. Normally people tend to lose charisma just because they like to make themselves good at hitting things. That said, it doesn't mean that your character's awful, it just means that it goes in reverse direction, so that's a minus 1 at 8. At 6 you'd be at minus 2, but when you're getting to sort of the 6s, you kind of want to be steering clear of that because you're having to really bend the game, and it doesn't like it. It starts messing with the balance a little bit. So after we've sort of got our ability scores, it's worth mentioning actually race. A lot of the races in Pathfinder have sort of ability score modifiers. As Ben was saying, dwarves take a minus 2 to charisma, but get a plus 2 to, do you know off the top of your head?
Constitution and wisdom.
Yep. So what that means is that a lot of people will pick the more, it encourages people to pick the more obscure characters, the more obscure races, to get a greater variety, because normally you're trading a minus 2 in one thing for plus 2 in 2 others, and there are some really obscure ones which have like a plus 5 to strength, but your charisma's like 4 because you're a giant and you keep stepping on people. Like, it depends on...
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit. So, going around just quickly, what are people's races?
I am human.
Yep. Bryn?
I am a halfling.
Mm-hmm.
Dwarf.
Yep.
A human again.
Uh-huh. Humans get extra feats and skill points just to reflect that they're apparently quite good at, you know, adapting to situations. Halflings, off the top of my head, they get a plus 2 to charisma, don't they?
They get plus 2 to dexterity and plus 2 to charisma, yeah. And they take a hit to strength.
Yeah, obviously.
Because they're tiny.
They're really small.
I am 3'2".
Wow! On the bright side, we can fit you in a rucksack if we need to. So once we've got those core abilities, we're heading into discussing basically skills. So as I was saying earlier, outside of combat, never mind inside, you're going to be rolling dice to see what you're good at, what you're bad at. These, off the top of my head, these include things like, you know, acrobatics, climb, diplomacy, disguise, handle animal. It's quite a broad list. The idea is that it's meant to cover as much as possible, so that your character's sort of individuality will shine through in the game system. I'm not going to get everyone to go sort of crazy because it'll take ages because there's so many. But just having a look at your sheet, James, what would you say are the things that you're really good at, and is there anything that you're violently terrible at?
Sure. I'm quite outdoorsy, so I'm quite good at things like handle animal, riding, if I take off my massive armour the size of a house, that sort of stuff.
Worth mentioning, actually, at this point. Armour has something called an armour check penalty. So what that is it's a penalty that you take for wearing big, heavy armour, which makes you great and hard to hit, but it doesn't really make sense for someone wearing, like James is saying, a house to be good at dancing and acrobatics. So you'll tend to take a massive penalty whilst you're wearing it, but that'll go away the second you take the armour off. So that's sort of what James is referring to there.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else here I concentrate on. Oh, yes, I also have very strong knowledge nobility because I was born with a silver spoon jammed down my throat, like really quite far, like scooping my lungs out far. So I'm insanely good at that. I'm very bad at stealth for a wide variety of reasons.
That'll probably be the headlight eagle eyes you've got going on there.
Here, burgling you quietly. Shh! Not a crime! Shh!
I feel like it ought to have Kit's voice, your armour. It ought to be like a Cylon or a Rider.
Yeah.
Bryn, heading on to yourself. What are you good at? What are you bad at?
So, basically, I love skill points, and I didn't get very many. I mean, I got more than the cleric, obviously.
Right. And that would be because you're taking the hit to intelligence, amongst other things, right?
What? No, I have an intelligence of 16.
So why are you so low on skill points?
Just because I need them all.
Oh, that's right, because you're not actually that low. You just feel low.
Yes, I feel low. I put them basically in two main areas. I put some in talky skills, so bluff and diplomacy. And I put some in some sort of magic-related skills, so spellcraft and knowledge arcana.
Well, yeah, they're really straightforward.
The two obvious places, basically.
Yeah, knowledge arcana, if anyone's playing anything sort of arcane, magic-y, in fact, anything magic-y at all, you really do want to have that. It's pretty much the you know what magic is. If you were going to play someone, I've seen this play before, where you're sort of playing someone who's fallen into magic and doesn't really know what they're doing, you can sort of reflect that by having sort of a low knowledge arcana. It makes sense, but the way that Pathfinder works is it tends to put a lot through that skill that isn't sort of knowledge-based. It's like to do a spell and know what the correct spell in return is,
yeah,
which some would say you could do instinctively.
And
so
to recognise other people's spells and stuff. It's, you know, it didn't necessarily have to be there, but I didn't want to... I was the only person who would take it, and I didn't want to leave the group without it.
And it really hamstrings you if you don't have it later on, certainly.
I'm also surprisingly good at stealth. Not because I've put any points in it, but just because being a sorcerer, I'm not allowed to wear armour.
Well, plus halflings.
And I'm a halfling, so I'm tiny and hard to notice.
You're hiding behind a vase.
Essentially, yes.
He's hiding behind a vase in an amazingly immaculate suit.
It's also a vase.
Okay, and Ben, heading on to you.
To quickly illustrate, Bryn, how many skill points did you get?
6.
Okay, not enough. I got 3.
How many did you get, Lyd?
I don't actually know.
It was
Lyd got 27, 29, something like that.
Oh, 50. Bryn's so bitter.
60.
Basically, because she's a rogue, she gets...
I think it's about 40.
She gets a lot. It's around the sort of 40,
also,
17.
Also, I'm nearer
depending.
To pie.
Piles.
So I'm fairly certain Ben doesn't have pie skill points. How many skill points do you have?
No, okay, I've got 3.
Okay.
I don't even know how you walk around successfully.
Actually, with my -3 in acrobatics, nor am I. That's what a peg leg does to you. That's not including my -6 armor check penalty.
Wow.
So when I'm
clumsy, just carry you. Is that
actually many of my spells and miracles are to do with not falling in water and dying.
Basically, most of your skills could be replicated by just like wearing a life jacket.
Yes,
that is now the cleric's nickname. Life jacket.
Good. That's
oh
nice.
Yeah, for anyone who's never played an RPG before, you can spend as long as you want coming up with your name. If you wear a lot of armor, you're always Tin Man. If you're a dwarf, you're always Stumpy. Like, you will get a nickname whether
so
you want one.
Pretty much,
more.
These role players are very imaginative, and I'm not saying that bitterly. No, actually, my knowledge of religion is 0. It's actually 1, but it's an unranked skill. So.
Yeah,
so I don't know much about religion because I was made religious by the School of Hard Miracles. pretty much almost dying and finding religion that way. So unlike, you know, being schooled like these flash spell people. But I do have a 10 in profession sailor because I was a sailor.
For years.
I also chose the dwarven subtype salt beard, which is a dwarf that lives by water. You're going to cover that later, aren't you?
Totally worth mentioning. Yeah. I'm just chuckling because I love the ones that are named and are creatively named, but really obvious what they are. Like, yeah. James's character, we'll cover it a bit later, has a feat called Pomp and Pageantry, which is the best name ever for what it is. We'll cover it a bit later, but I really love it when you've got those names that are just creative but just obvious. It really helps.
I've also got the classic heel, but yes, I am super bad at acrobatics, stealth,
and for a sailor, swimming.
Well, you know, I think I'm all
you
right.
Sink like a
no, no, no. I'm all right. I've got a 2. I just have to take my armor off. The peg leg doesn't actually not help with that. I guess it doesn't make you less buoyant.
Which skill would you use if you were taking off your armor in a hurry?
I'd use stepping stones, which is one of my domain miracles, which creates a stone.
Ooh, look at you with your press.
Yeah, yeah. And I also have a heavy wooden shield, which is buoyant.
Clever.
So I'll just hang off the bottom of it. Drowning, but near the surface.
Lying on the
forecast
top.
This beautiful yeah. scene where our two characters are both like in Titanic. We're both on
There's
this
no
shield.
Room.
One of us hanging off the edge.
Never let go. Let go.
I'm totally going to kick
it
you off.
It removes the thing because I can have endure elements. So I'd just be like,
it's really yeah. cold.
I don't care. It's fine.
Well, so Jack's just there in the water watching her freeze on the raft.
Yeah, just like should have been a cleric.
That would have been that film.
Very different movie.
I haven't watched that. Okay, Lyd, on to yourself. What are you good at and what are you bad at?
I am very good at all things moving quietly.
And let's be honest, you're good at all the things. You have so many ranks.
I have a lot of ranks, and I managed to try and write a complicated backstory to tie that together.
Which works. Yeah, it's good.
Anything acrobatics, climb, sleight of hand, stealth and survival, I'm good at.
Presumably trap findings on there.
Well, I was going to group them, Alex. All things movement I can do. All things kind of slightly mechanical as well. Mm-hmm. So things like... trap finding,
disabled
device, and those escape artist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why my fly is so high.
Oh, it's because it's dexterity. The idea is that if someone else gives you the ability to fly, like the cleric eventually, like if he chooses, can have spells like mass fly, where everyone flies.
Amazing.
And if he gives it to you, because you're just naturally really good with your body, you're just like, oh no, yeah, I get this. It's meant to be that you. High dex is sort of reflecting that you pick stuff up really quickly as well.
I'm just a quick and sharp. I use daggers as well, so that's me, quick and sharp. except for when talking to other people. I am a stumbly. So I stay silent both to be cool and to hide how uncool I am. So, yeah.
But interestingly, we'll cover it a little bit. You do have the language sign, so presumably you're incredibly eloquent because that's got to be finger based, right?
What? You've got an amazing accent in sign language.
Yeah, I am so cool in sign language, and I am filthy in French.
Sure.
So it's just English I struggle with.
So it's worth mentioning at this point. Normally in the RPG games, you tend to have sort of common. It's the sort of universal translator language, really. And then the races have their own, whereas I kind of prefer to have a bit more variety. So what I've done in this is that all of those racial languages are still there, in addition to basically the languages of the real world. French is a thing, German's a thing, Swahili, if you want to speak Swahili, is a thing. Don't play a Swahili character, because I do not know enough about the language to make that work. Mm-hmm. So all of you are covering a bunch of them. It was just worth mentioning that Lydia took sign language, which is one that you can do,
yep.
And lip reading.
I got both.
Yeah, it's just worth mentioning because those are options in Pathfinder. One of the reasons that I like it is it covers those more obscure things.
Yep.
And it can be really useful, particularly in rogues. Inevitably, you're hanging outside some window somewhere looking
and
in.
No one can understand me
just
at all.
Just quickly checking, you can also speak English, right?
Yeah. Although not very well, as we've established. It's my first language, but it's also my worst.
Cool. So at this point, we're just going to take a brief break, and then we're going to come back and start talking about feats. So bear with us 1 second.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi guys, Alex here. Normally we'd put an ad break at this point, letting you know about new developments at Rusty Quill, mention sponsors, or just recommend other shows that we think you'd enjoy. But today, we just want to take the time to thank you. It takes a lot of time and effort and money to make podcasts like this, and it means a lot to us that you've decided to listen, so thank you. You're awesome. In fact, you are so awesome that we want to keep making great content for you and introduce you to loads of new shows. But in order to do that, we need your help. The more listeners that we get, the more content we can make. It's as simple as that. And the best way that we can get listeners is by word of mouth. In the credits at the end of the episode, we include details about how you can get involved online. But honestly, the best way that you can help us is by recommending us to people that you know. Tell a friend, tell a co-worker, tell your pet iguana. If just one of the people or lizards that you talk to subscribes, that's going to be a huge help to us. We're looking forward to making loads more content for you in the future, and we want to share it with everyone that you care about. So thanks again for getting involved, and we hope we get to meet you, your friends, and all your lizards real soon. Well, that's everything for now, so sit back, relax, and let's get back to the show.
And welcome back. So now we're going to be discussing feats. Feats.
I have two. Oh. They're on my legs.
You have one.
I have extra feet.
Damn it already.
This is a meta podcast, James. A meta podcast.
So by feats, of course, what we're meaning is sort of special abilities almost. I mean, a lot of people reference anime for this. You know, it's your Kamehameha, if you know that as a reference. It's your super special,
probably
mega,
more
awesome
a spell-like ability, actually.
What I'm getting at is that it's a sort of thing that makes you you. It's that skill that your character figured out at like age 12. Hey, if I spin this way, I can kick extra hard. It's just a technique or an affinity that your character in their past sort of developed. They can be taught as well. Obviously, if you have a tutor, they'll teach you the feats that they knew. And they're normally giving sort of a bit more pronounced bonuses to things. So starting with... let's go the other way around. Starting with you, Lydia.
Right.
What feats did you have?
Well, you might have remembered from 2 minutes ago talking about stats that I am very good at moving and sneaking and bending, but mm-hmm. not very strong. Mm-hmm. So I took feats that kind of helped with that. My two main ones are Dirty Fighter, mm-hmm. which essentially means... the practical upshot is +1 when flanking, and it kind of means that I'm always trying to get around you and getting a knife under your ribs from behind.
Is that a feat or is that a trait?
Sorry?
Do you want to us to talk about both?
I don't know the difference.
Honestly,
minor.
The difference in Pathfinder is that traits tend to be very explicitly backstory related, and Pathfinder really encourages you to only pick traits that are relevant.
So these are.
So I think you have a couple like the crowd based.
Well, these are my only two. So like Crowd Dodger and Dirty Fighter are my...
Yeah, so
they're
those
traits,
are,
yeah.
What's a feat then?
So no, the main difference is that you only get traits at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
you get feats as you level up.
Right, so these are traits.
And feats tend to be bigger. Like,
yeah.
Traits tend to be quite small bonuses, and feats, at least at higher levels, become much bigger bonuses.
Yeah, I don't think I have any feats.
That'll be a feat.
That's a feat.
Yeah,
two weapon fights.
Basically, the idea...
Sorry. And weapon finesse is a feat as well.
Mm-hmm. Those will be your two.
See, the idea behind it is, like Bryn's saying, that you take the traits at the start. Mechanically, actually, it makes your character more individual at lower levels, because those feats are kind of a big deal every time you level up, and you can't give a starting character too many, because it really breaks the game. So the way they got around that is, here, you get like a +1, like just one rank in swimming.
Okay.
But that's a really nice way to basically, in a party of everyone being a bit naff, suddenly you're the swimmer, even though it's only a +1.
Yep.
It just helps individuate your character a bit.
Cool.
So what were the two feats that you had?
Sorry, so my I've got two weapon fighting, which means that I can go crazy with those daggers without much of a penalty. And I've got weapon finesse, which is particularly good when you have very little strength and very high dex, because I get to swap those two in a couple of circumstances.
So just to go into those a little bit of detail, the two weapon fighting one is that anyone can two weapon fight in Pathfinder if you've got the hands for it.
But they're rubbish.
Yeah, you take lots and lots of penalties. So you're looking at like a -4,
minus six.
Minus four in your primary hand, -10 in your offhand.
Good grief. So obviously no one ever chooses to go that route unless they're putting the feats in. The two weapon fighting basically just minimises that till... Yeah. You're not really taking a penalty at all.
Yeah, well, my weapons are light, which minuses two from the penalties, and then with two weapon fighting, it takes them down to -4 each. So it's -4, then -2 from that, so I'm -2.
Yes, yes.
On both hands.
Yeah.
Which is really useful.
Because it's plus a dagger, minus a bit.
But the catch with that is that if you really want to sort of up this, you're going to have to dedicate a lot of the feats that you pick as you level up. To just getting that two weapon fighting is that's the trade off with it, is that you get literally twice as much damage out, but you do have to sort of go, I really wanted to be able to like climb faster, but I'll just have to put more into those two weapon fighting.
I've kind of got climbing covered for a while.
And then the weapon finesse one specifically trades strength when you're calculating attacks for dexterity. And obviously because you've got such a high dexterity being a rogue, it makes sense to have high dex, which makes you harder to hit.
Yeah.
But it makes it quite efficient because you're also high dex to hit. The trade-off being that you'll actually do a little bit less damage, but that's why you have the two-weapon fighting.
Yep. So essentially, I don't take anyone on face forward. It's more a kind of wiggling and stabbing and you're flipping and flicking and jumping down from on high and
you're very much
popping
an
up
unpleasant
from below.
Surprise. Yeah.
Yes, that's me.
You're someone's bad day.
I'm someone's bad day.
Okay, Ben, heading on to yourself.
You were correct, I have 1 feat. Because not being a human, I don't get the extra adaptable feat. So I have Iron Will, +2 to my will save. I am very stubborn. And if anyone tries to control my mind, or generally stop me from doing things, I'm better at not doing that. I do have about a billion special abilities, though. So I guess I'll quickly talk about those, because that's kind of what clerics have instead of feats.
Sure, spin through.
I worship Poseidon, which will make sense in setting. I'll leave that for a bit later. But my domains are water and specifically islands. Hence the whole sailor thing, which means that, as I mentioned, you get stepping stones, so I can create a floating disc per 4 cleric levels, and they stick around for a minute, which is very good for stopping me sinking to my death. And I also have icicle, which is basically I could just fire icicles at people and do some damage.
Are you the Ice King from Adventure Time?
If I could do his voice, I would, but I can't, so I won't. Sorry. But if we ever find a blue robe and a cursed crown, I'm going down that route.
That's it, fans. If you want to cosplay,
I'll get my own butler, and he'll be called Gunther, and it'll be great.
Okay, and traits actually. While we've got you here,
I get a lot for being a dwarf, and some more for being a saltbeard. So I get a +2 save versus poison, +4 combat maneuver defense versus bull rush and trip, because I'm very stocky and...
Just to jump in, bull rush being where someone is physically sort of trying to push your character, say, over a cliff or out of the way or something.
Rugby tackle kind of thing.
Yeah, and trip being, you know, tripping someone up so that they end up prone on the floor, which has a whole mess of rules associated to it, which you're going to have to learn, Mr. Pegleg.
Good. +2 on appraise to all treasure found in or underwater, which is the saltbeard. +2 perception on stone-based works and traps and hidden doors and stuff. That's the dwarf. Dark vision 60 foot. That's the dwarf. +2 to sea survival.
To spell out as well, dark vision being you can literally see in pitch black. It's worth noting, Pathfinder, there's two types. There's low light vision and then there's dark vision. Low light vision is sort of like, you know, if there was a candlelight that would like, you know, 50 foot, and then in a human you're like, I think there's something out there. Like an elf will get low light vision. That means they can see like 100 foot. I mean, I'm plucking these figures out of the air, but it basically means you're really good when there's just a tiny amount of light. Whereas dark vision is that you can only see in black and white. That's actually part of it, is it's monochrome, but it like pitch black. It's like wearing like infrared goggles or something like that, which is quite useful.
And the last thing, plus two to survival, plus one to attack, and plus two to dodge against aquatic and water types. Again, sword
almost
beards.
Like you've got a watery backstory.
I do have a watery backstory. It's very watery.
Okay, on to yourself, Bryn.
So I get a bunch of bonuses for being a halfling. Halflings are lucky. They're fearless. They're sure-footed and they have keen senses. And basically that improves my saving throws and a couple of skills, which may or may not come up. We will see. The feat I chose for my character was combat casting, which is a very boring one. It's one of those things it's hard to function without. Basically, I can't really fight, and as we've already established, I'm quite squishy. But if someone attacks me while I'm trying to cast a spell, it goes wrong. But combat casting helps me.
Sort of mitigate that.
Mitigate that, yeah. It doesn't go wrong quite so
often. It's one of those feats. It's not flashy. It doesn't have a big like title or anything. But what it comes down to is mechanically, like in the rules of the game, it's really, really useful.
Yeah.
And it's fine to start without it. And then once you do, you really, really quickly realise why you should have taken it in the first place.
My much more exciting thing is my class feature. So sorcerers are not like wizards. They don't get their magical power from studying and learning and memorizing stuff. They get it spontaneously because of something weird in their ancestry.
Because magic!
Because magic. And so sorcerers get to choose a bloodline. I've chosen the draconic bloodline. So it turns out that one of my ancestors was a dragon.
Which he deliberately picked because, like, the backstory is all of it, like, the world history, sorry, is all available on the website, rustyquill.com. But it's. Yeah, it's a big decision from Bryn.
It's a plot point.
You know, there's lots of options. It's not necessarily the most powerful one. In fact, it's certainly not the most powerful one. But if you can build a character who is eventually going to turn into a dragon, why wouldn't you do that? What possible reason could you have? So hopefully, you know, if we depending on how long we play this campaign and play these characters, my character will eventually turn into a dragon. Which I'm quite excited about.
Oh, Bryn, always wanting to be a dragon.
Yes.
No one ever wants to grow up and be a dungeon. They always want to grow up and be a dragon.
The one ability I have so far from having draconic ancestry is that I can spontaneously grow claws.
Ooh.
I have decided my character doesn't yet know this.
Wicked.
We'll see if he finds out at any point.
Oh, I'm all over that. Okay.
I took two reasonably dull traits as well, which were influence and rich parents. So I've written a backstory about quite a wealthy, influential family based in Egypt. I think character backstories are going up on the website at some point.
Yeah, yeah. What we've got is we've got sort of abridged versions because obviously we don't want you, audience, to know every single thing about the character because then there's no such thing as a reveal, which would be rubbish storytelling.
Indeed. Yeah, again, not particularly exciting, but I like creating characters who have lots of potential connections and lots of potential story hooks, and so there's a big family and lots of things going on there.
Well, I mean, we'll go into the backstory, like, we'll round off talking about how you generate backstory and things, but yeah, I'm a big believer that the sort of the mechanics of your character really has to reflect that backstory, otherwise you tend to end up just playing the numbers. Which is why with James, who you haven't really done RPGs before, we were really making sure that, like, when building your character, we had a lot of people sort of saying, "Trust me, you want to have your numbers reflecting this part of your personality and so on, because otherwise you can end up kind of disjointed and it can come across a bit weird." So, finishing with you, traits and feats.
Speaking of influential families,
So I might need a bit of help just disentangling what's a feat and what's a trait here.
Yes.
But yeah, so in terms of what I think of the feats bits, I have exotic weapon proficiency, bastard sword.
And why did you pick that?
Because it's big and flashy, biggest and flashiest one.
Yeah.
Here we go. I want the best sword. What can I do? Yeah, best one, biggest sword. Brilliant. So that's it. Mm-hmm. So the character is all about being big and flashy and as impressive as possible because he's on the hunt for glory.
Mm-hmm.
So the bastard sword, and in my mind's eye, I've got this sort of, you know, Rocky-style montage where he just, you know, pays someone to make him better at swords.
So your Rocky-style montage is you just paying by card. And this guy's just selling you stuff.
I say montage, literally, it's two bars long.
Yeah, that's clear.
Yeah,
thank
you. Done. Fine. Oh, excellent. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, so I've got a couple of... yeah, the other warrior-y, fighter-y one I have is Power Attack. Mm-hmm. Which you had to tell me what the exact mechanics of that are, but basically, isn't it? It's slightly harder to hit a thing, but when you hit, it's harder.
It's really directly. It's just trading attack bonus for damage. So the idea is that you see something, you're like, he's really big. I don't really need to aim. I just have to vaguely wave my sword in his direction and I'm going to hit him. Then you want to be doing that power attack. It's really useful against like big, heffing great monsters, which have huge like penalties to their dodge because they're just big, heffing great monster-y things.
Or buildings.
Buildings, yeah.
Or, you're gonna... or trees.
Yeah. See, Ben's played power attack before.
I'd like to think that I'm the sort of character that would power up a power attack, try and hit a building and miss.
Well, then power attack is the thing for you.
In my mind's eye, in the montage, he practices that by cutting a cow in half in a single blow. Oh, pretty impressive.
Lovely. It wasn't the first blow, was it? It was a single blow, but it was the third try.
It. Stand still. Yes, and the third feat I have is Noble Scion, to indicate the fact that I'm from very, very blue blood, and I've plus two to knowledge and ability from that. I think, generally speaking, I was trying to pick things that were more in keeping with the character rather than, like, I'd like some numbers, please.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people like who've played this game before and hear that would go, oh, he's not very optimised. Yeah, it's not something that I'm ever going to encourage people to do. Is I'd far rather you had a lot of flavour.
I'm optimised for having fun, yeah?
How about traits?
Traits, yeah. So I have rich parents.
Shocker.
I had rich parents. They're dead now. Aww. And that's why I'm now rich. Or was, until I spent all of my money on extremely flashy armour that confers no real bonuses.
And my favourite...
Say again?
And what's my favourite trait?
Oh, yes, pomp and pageantry, which means that I get plus one on rolls for acrobatics, diplomacy, handle animal, intimidate, perform or ride if I take twice as long doing the thing.
So it's the idea of, you know, you're riding to get away from the monsters and everyone's, you know, 10 minutes ahead of you going, come on, come on, and you're just dressaging along.
I'm going half the speed, but I'm getting away better. That's it. Not sure how that's going to work.
I love it. I love that you've managed to basically make poshness like a bonus.
Yep.
It's brilliant. I love it.
So it is. So I will literally be able to roll the dice and check my privilege, which so that'll be good. So yeah, so I just went for things that, you know, would fit with the character really. Mm-hmm. that one sounds like it would be fun to play, so I'll give that a go. And even if, you know, I fail the dice roll, mm-hmm. which is quite likely, I will at least have fun describing
and look
how
good
I
doing it.
And look, oh yeah. Yep, yep. It's all about the elegant dismount.
Yeah, so all of those things about being matching your backstory, which in James's case have come out as a wonderful, glorious show of shimmers and gold and fripperies. In my case, come out as crowd dodger and dirty fighter. So I can slip around people and dodge blows, and dirty fighter means that I get plus one coming around from the back. So once I've ducked under your fist, I will stab you in the gut. That also fits with my character story.
See, the thing I find really fun from a game mastering perspective is that James goes to all this effort to really, really pick all of the sort of feats and the traits that reflect his bombastic character who makes unwise decisions, which of course requires him to make unwise decisions. And then we've got Lydia, who by making perfectly like legitimate trait choices for, you know, this really reflects my backstory, is also really useful in the game.
Yeah, because I am not strong, and so being able to flip, oh no, that was something else, crowd. So yeah, up in my acrobatics and sliding behind people.
Oh yeah,
is kind of what I do. Also, trap finding and sneak attack, which come from being a rogue.
Uh huh. So. Oh, it's worth actually describing sneak attack at this point.
All right, sneak attack means plus 1d6 to damage flanking. And if you're listening along at home, listeners, you'll remember that I'm trying. I also get plus 1 attack when fighting from the when flanking from dirty fighters. Mm-hmm. So I will not be coming at you from the front.
No. So to spell out flanking just a little bit more for people who've, you know, never played at all, flanking is the idea that if there is, say, two people facing an enemy from opposite sides, the idea is that the person in the middle doesn't know who to defend against, and that should be reflected in a bonus. So that's normally in a bonus to actually hit the person, but rogues are the class where they actually get a bonus to do damage as well, because they're banking on that. They're the ones who are never going to sort of pick a straight fight with you. They're going to wait until sort of Bertie, James's character, wades in going, "Everybody look at me!" At which point she's going around behind everyone, sort of shanking them from behind.
Those bonuses also apply if you catch an enemy by surprise.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's a thing in Pathfinder called flat-footed, which is that idea is that if you get the drop on them for a change...
And I will literally drop on them because you should see my climbing skills.
Then, you get to basically get those bonuses as well. Just running through quickly, actually, just worth mentioning, hit points. These are determined by your constitution stats. Normally Pathfinder suggests that you roll for these. I tend to discourage this as a game master because you can end up having a fighter who, just through bad luck, has a glass jaw, and it really, really messes the game's mechanic up, especially at higher levels. Because yes, it averages out, but those bad rolls can really break your character. So what I've done is I deliberately
Well, at first level you get the maximum available anyway.
Very true.
But we're gonna use a fixed value for future levels rather than rolling for it.
Sure. So just running through quickly, at first level this is at the max, but from then on we'll be taking a percentage of the max, which I believe I set at off the top of my head it was about
75% of your die.
Yeah, because I find that slightly ekes in your favour with regards to...
It's a house rule I've used for a number of years, and it's always worked really well.
Yeah, there's some other versions where you roll like 6 dice and pick the best one, but ultimately you're kind of creating problems that you don't need. So just running around quickly, how many hit points do you have, James?
13.
Bryn?
7.
11.
Mm-hmm.
10.
Okay, cool. So actually, for a level 1 party, you've actually got quite a decent amount of hit points.
Apart from Bryn.
Bryn doesn't need hit points because he can smile his problems away.
He's got happy points.
Okay, heading into now, sort of the last bits before we start getting into backstory, just equipment. Going around quickly, obviously James, we've already covered...
Bastard sword!
Huge armour!
Also, I have a rapier for when I need to stab somebody at a formal occasion.
Genuinely true.
Notice that he takes the feet of rich parents, which is meant to give you like, okay, I can get all of this brilliant equipment, which will give me an early boost. Or...
My one piece of equipment I don't need that's huge and impressive.
Yeah,
I also have heavy steel shield, adventuring kit, and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Miss clothing.
Adventuring kit being basically rope, torches, camping equipment, things like that. It's the stuff that inevitably you're going to end up wanting in the wilderness, and, you know, God bless Pathfinder, they did just say, look, there's an adventuring kit. Just buy the kit. It's got the things you want. Oh, you need a bigger kit? Get the bigger adventuring kit. Like, they just lumped it together because there's so many lists of equipment. Rin, answer your equipment quickly.
My character has in fact bought a light crossbow and some daggers and some bolts for the crossbow, none of which he can use very well, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I also have an adventuring kit and lots of clothing, because it's important to look good.
It is important to look good whilst you're doing stuff.
Can I check a thing quickly? Because I've spotted that your clothing, Bryn, weighs 10 pounds. Mine weighs 25. I realise I'm bigger than you, but am I like wearing a marquee with a spare marquee in my bag?
Well, it's about having multiple sets.
Oh, all right, fair enough. So I've got loads of different sets.
Yes, as do I.
I've never known anyone have as many ruffs as your character, James. He's got ruffs for his arms, his thighs.
Arm ruffs, leg ruffs, swimming ruffs.
Oh yeah, his swimming ruffs.
Remember, I am literally half the size of you as well.
Probably proportionately less if you think about it in terms of like volume.
Let's be honest, Bryn is the equivalent.
I could work that out if you really want.
Hamid is what? The equivalent of Bertie's like leg? Should we say? It makes sense. Okay, Ben, answer yourself.
I have a trident.
Yes.
Because it is my god's favourite weapon.
Yeah, worth mentioning at this point. I feel like we probably should. I will go into it a bit more, but in this game setting, Pathfinder likes using a pantheon rather than like a single deity or anything like that. So for various reasons, I've gone with the Greek pantheon, which is obviously why Mr. Trident over here has a trident. And it's because it's, you know, it's the weapon of his chosen deity.
Find a picture of Poseidon without a trident. Or dolphins.
There you go, homework.
Hence why his holy symbol is the Driftwood Dolphin.
Yep, yep.
Scale mail, heavy wooden shield for the aforementioned floating. I also have basically an adventuring kit. I've also got a cold lantern, which is a lantern.
I may have misnamed that. Wow! It basically, there's two types of lantern that are effectively the same price.
The dangerous
Pathfinder.
One and the not dangerous one.
Yeah, there's one which is a candle covered in glass, and there's one which is a candle covered in steel grill. And anyone who knows their mining history will know that doing so means it can't set off flammable gas. It's a real thing because it dissipates the heat. But yeah, in Pathfinder, it actually has a small difference. So if it's the same cost, why wouldn't you get it?
Yep. And I'm a miner. Well, was a miner.
Yeah.
Where that went. Yeah, and also base in addition, compass and a signal whistle, because they're just very useful things to have.
Okay. So, Lydia, how about yourself? What equipment are you sporting?
I've got leather armour, which is my clothing, basically. I like the leather. Underneath my super cool leather jacket, I have spring-loaded wrist sheaths.
Oh, yeah.
See, these are the daggers. Ones where... and then... trying to pull the daggers back because they kind of only work one
that,
way.
That was on me. You weren't aware of them, and they're my like favourite thing because they allow you to draw as a swift action. That's... but then it takes you so long to put them
to
away
to winch them back, particularly as I'm not very strong, so I can imagine I'm there kind of struggling afterwards.
Oh, it's alright, Papa Bertie can come over and do your issues.
I don't think I would.
Come here, stealthy one.
I don't think my character would enjoy that at all. Also, within my cool leather clothes are small pockets in which you will find thieves' tools and a disguise kit and playing cards and a ton of daggers.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've only got four right now, but I'll be looking to increase that number.
I mean, rogues in general, out of everyone, I'd say rogues tend to end up being quite the most diverse with equipment.
Dagger-centric.
So, yeah, so with sort of the fighters, and even the sort of cleric, because he's sort of filling a sort of tanky role, and they tend to put a lot of money into sort of magic armour and a magic sword and stuff, and they just sort of bump those up. Whereas with the rogue, it's like, I use my bat utility belt, my anti-carousel spray, and all kinds of nonsense.
For when we're fighting a fairground.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it, honestly, like with the rogue, it's going to be
I'd
worth
you... I think
I'd
do quite well fighting a fairground. I mean, I could... unlock the back door, wrench it all open, disguise myself as a carny and take off.
Have you never seen the Adam West Batman movie where he has anti-shark spray?
Yes, oh, yes!
That's the one where he apparently been the Joker to a surfer contest.
Yes, it's apparently been in his utility belt the entire series.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't needed it.
How big is this guy's utility belt? Staggering. All right, sorry.
There's something called Handy Haversack, you'll learn. It's one of those. It's a bottomless bag, basically.
Oh, like Santa's sack?
Yes, Santa. Okay. Well, Santa has a bag of holding, which is
Batman.
A bigger handy haversack.
Batman is Santa.
That's what we need to take away from
good.
This. See, you're learning, Jay.
I feel like I'm gaining a lot. Okay,
so running around for the very last of the mechanics, there are a few values that are derived from all of the stuff we built, so you don't have to sort of choose it. It is just automatically generated by all of the scores. So it's stuff like saving throws, which are just, you know, how good you are at saving against, say, a poison or a dodge, things like that. So, what, for instance, James, what are yours?
That is a good question. Oh, there we go. So my fortitude save is 5.
That'll be to protect against poisons, the cold, things like that.
Eating too many pies.
Yep.
My reflex save is 1.
Does what it says on the tin. If someone's throwing things at you, you are more likely to duck or dodge out of the way of a trap.
And my will save is -1 because I'm easily distracted by people jingling their keys on the other side of the room.
So will is a bit of a weird one because it reflects two things in Pathfinder, which is the ability for people to persuade you and manipulate you and things like that. A little bit, but it's mostly just to do with magic. So there is a bit of a counterintuitive thing where sometimes will can make you easier to hit with a big fiery ball Despite the fact that you'd think you'd be able to dodge it, I'm not talking specifically Fireball, but it's just there are some spells where you'd think it would be based off a dodge, and actually it's will save. Right. Mostly, though, it tends to be things like mind control and things like that. And
the struggle with me, there's very little mind to control.
Well, that's the thing, is I'm starting to think it ought to be a plus. So, Bryn, how about yourself? What are your saving throws?
My saves are Fortitude of 2, mm-hmm. a Reflex of 3, uh-huh. and a Will of 3.
Yep. Ben?
Fortitude of 5, mm-hmm. Reflex of 0, mm-hmm. and a Will of 8.
Yeah, so that's the benefit for the clerics. Is clerics, sometimes people kind of, you know, knock on clerics like, they're like a fighter and not as good, or a magician and not as good. But the trade-off is, yeah, you get massive, enormous saves, particularly the will save is
that's,
huge.
That is also with my feet, but I will have a 6 anyway. So
yeah, exactly, like you're tearing away already. Yeah. And Lyd?
My fortitude is a feeble 1, so please don't poison me. My reflex is a 5, so yeah, feel free to throw stuff at me. And my will is 2, so...
So what? Yeah.
It's really nondescript.
So where do we fall, though, if I'm throwing poison at you?
I think that's fine, because if I dodge it, I'm fine. It's and, you know, if you put it in my food, I'll probably perceive it, because mm-hmm. Got a lot of those kinds.
I think that's a pie.
Yes, tasty, pie. Tasty poison.
But if you, yeah, just don't any kind of cloud of poison that I can't avoid, that'd be bad.
Yeah, okay.
Can't stop
giving Alex tips.
No. Cloud of poison. Yeah, no. Yeah, I know what you mean. Another one that's derived very quickly, initiative, which is how quick off the mark you are, because this is a turn-based game for combat. We'll discuss this in episode 1 when we're actually doing some combat, but that determines sort of your turn order. So normally, for instance, Lydia would have a very high initiative because it's reflecting that she's so quick off the mark, yep. and it's a big bonus for rogues, isn't it, going first?
It's 3.
So yours is 3, for instance. Yep. James is...
Mine is 1, which I assume is the first, and therefore the best.
Yes. Bryn, how about yourself?
2.
And Ben?
0.
Yeah. That's for the kind of party makeup we have. That's a totally standard setup. There are a few feats which will boost them and things like that.
Yeah, no one's sort of biased the system by having 8 at first level, which you occasionally get where one person has 8 and everyone else has like 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Whereas we're actually all quite close, which will be interesting.
So there's a lot of optimization tactics where some people will deliberately get the biggest initiative that they can and also the biggest like one-hit wonder spell that they can. So it's just like you encounter 60 goblins, boom, you encounter 4 goblins. Like you see it happen a lot. And attack values, just briefly, this will depend on your base attack bonus, which is just determined by which is, one sec, it's just that one there. Oh, where is it? There. So that's your attack bonus with that weapon.
Okay.
And your base attack bonus is there. So your base attack bonus is determined by your class. It is just a fixed number. And then your attack bonus with a weapon will be factoring in, you know, that weapon, which mm-hmm. will tell you your strength, or in Lydia's case, because of weapon finesse, dexterity, and also the base attack bonus, sort of all of that lumped together. So yours would be with the weapon?
4.
With the bastard sword, yeah.
And with the rapier? Bastard sword, and with the rapier, it's also 4.
Uh-huh. And your base attack is...
1.
Yeah. Bryn?
So my base attack is 0,
uh-huh.
And it's 0 with a dagger or my claws or whatever as well, because I'm basically a bit rubbish. It is 3 with a crossbow. I'm mm-hmm. not terrible with a crossbow, but I will mostly be doing spells,
yeah.
which are work
reflected.
Differently.
Yeah, they work completely differently, which is great. And yourself, Ben?
Yeah, mine I think is 2, because my base attack bonus is 0. Mm-hmm. Got a strength of 1, and the Trident and Light Mace are both attack bonus-y 1 weapons.
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure if that's correct. We'll chase that up.
That's fine. I've actually written 1 on my sheet and then I got confused from looking at the website earlier. So I think my attack bonus is actually 1 with Trident.
Okay, we'll chase it up and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, my base attack is 0.
Yep.
And then when I get my weapons out, because I can flip them with dexterity, I get a 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, calculating Lyd's attack bonus was a very complex process.
Because there's the penalties so from using 2 weapons, but there's the bonuses from the 2 weapon fighting, and then the negative from strength.
And it's
going to
be even more complex in practice, because I will get there's no point me attacking someone if I don't have a sneak attack or flanking bonus. So I am Mm-hmm. Everything is multipliers of small numbers.
But what I'd say, though, is this: a lot of this will come down to style of GM as well. So right. I'm a big fan of sort of environmental things. Mm-hmm. So as a rogue, I used to have a penchant for playing rogues. I really liked them as a thing.
I never would have guessed.
I know, right? But the way spring-loaded rishis.
They're a little bit too close together, aren't
they? The listeners can't see this, but Alex is in a big black cloak. he's got weapons all over him.
Well,
and
you know.
He's got grey face paint on.
Oh, yeah, eliminating the clanking.
His eyes are glowing red.
His eyes are glowing red.
Yeah.
And but, his speech, you can hear that lisp. That's the teeth, the vampiric teeth.
Oh, you guys. You're so flattering.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so talking about the environmental thing, it's worth noting that, like, for rogues, I'm a big fan of the environmental stuff, but all of you can take advantage. If there's a big load of rocks on a mountainside, give them a push, they will fall down on people.
I love big loads of
if
rocks.
There's a chandelier, why don't you cut that rope and drop it on some suckers?
Aww, like, swing on it.
Yeah, exactly. Is with the rogue... Rogue tends to work quite well if you have a GM who's willing to allow that kind of lateral thinking. If you have someone who's just saying, no, you will roll the dice and you will match the numbers and you are in a featureless room, then, yeah, it starts to get a bit bland.
Also, on that note, I really want to see Bertie try and swing off a chandelier. This is heroic. I'm quite heavy.
Minus 8 modifier. I accidentally ate it.
And
you're wearing it as a necklace.
Just to cover the last thing, which some people will get annoyed that we're breezing past, but it's such a huge topic, we'll probably have to do a metacast just to cover that, is spells. It's worth noting at this point that Ben's cleric gets access to a whole load of spells.
Like quite a lot.
A massive amount, and he has to pick every day which ones he's preparing, so there's not much point going over it at this point. It's worth noting, though, that he has a couple that he'll always have to prepare because they're his domains.
I've got some favoured spells as well. Oh, well, the domain spells then are Obscuring Mist and Air Bubble.
Sure. And normally you'll get people will pick out the ones that they think are best or suit their character most, but honestly, there's so many that we just can't go into it now. Bryn's character is a little bit different. He's what's called a spontaneous caster. So that means that rather than picking from a heffing great huge spell list every single day, he gets a much, much smaller... But he can use them as many times as his sort of body will allow him to. So it's actually worth listing
your spells.
I currently
know 6 spells. Mm-hmm. So my 0th level spells, my cantrips, and I can cast any of these as many times per day as I like.
Uh-huh.
I've taken Acid Splash, Message, Detect Magic, and Prestidigitation, which is a word I... often fail to say correctly.
It's a hard one. Prestidigitation is quite a useful one, though.
Oh,
it's
him showing
off.
Yeah,
prestidigitation.
The reason I know that is because I couldn't say it and then took it because it was my favourite spell of all of them, despite the fact that it's the weakest and used it all the time, because all it does is allows you to do flashy magic that has no mechanical value to the game whatsoever. Want to dye your hair? Your hair is dyed. Want to have one extra like ruff for 5 minutes? Done. But it doesn't actually It doesn't do anything even vaguely useful. It specifically says if this would give you like a real mechanical advantage. No,
I will mostly be calling it prestidigitation blah. So just to warn you,
it's just going to be abracadabra, isn't it?
We'll see.
Isn't it just your portable soup press?
Yes. Essentially, it's going to keep me looking good at all times.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's just that one. It's everyone who plays a magic player always wants to occasionally just go, okay, now I do something flashy. Does it do anything? No, I just want to be flashy. Press the digitation.
I mostly use it to light women's cigarettes in bars using just my thumb.
See, as long as they don't like fall madly in love with you, I'd call that a mechanical benefit. But you know,
they still
good.
Have an increased risk of cancer.
Thanks.
Can't
for
take that away with the press digitation.
No, I suppose you can't. Thanks for that.
Okay. It's important that this character's strong.
My first
message.
Level spells are Charm Person and Magic Missile, and I can cast 4 first level spells per day.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken just quite a broad range of
stuff
that does different things, because I like being versatile, basically.
Uh-huh. And heading into just the very last bit, we're not going to go into everyone's backstories here as well, because it'll take ages, because that's kind of the point of backstories. They're meant to be big and complete. But just generally speaking, when you're playing a game, especially for the first time, your game master, your GM, will normally give you a brief sort of on the story world, what kind of campaign it's going to be. Are you going to be spending all of your time in a dungeon? Are you going to be travelling between planets? Whatever. And obviously you don't want to be writing things and having ideas before he's given you that or she's given you that, because you can end up with something very out of place and then you're trying to bend it to fit and it just doesn't work.
Like having a salt beard. campaign.
I would have loved to have made that work. Like, he grew up on the only, like, lake that's, like, 50 metres wide.
Can we go back to the Oasis, guys? Why? You know.
There isn't.
Just want to use some of my bonuses.
So obviously, yeah, you want things that are appropriate, and that ties into what we were saying earlier, is you all want to gel, you don't want to be sort of treading on each other's toes. If every single person is playing like a water-based character, you better hope it's a water-based campaign, and you'd better have different sort of water-based skills, otherwise you're all just going to get annoying one another. Also, it's always worth sort of discussing stuff with your game master. Don't just make it in a bubble. Don't get your sort of brief and go, wicked, I'm going to go away. Okay, cool, so there's a secret society that exists in this place. That place doesn't exist. It does now. And you've got to have that back and forth, if only because everyone always thinks it's so that the GM can get their hooks in you and give plot elements that they can, like, sabotage you with later. Honestly, it's to stop you sabotaging yourselves most of the time. If you're going to insist on picking a character who's, you know, morbidly afraid of water, and the first thing that happens in the first session is you're teleported into the middle of the ocean again, it's going to have shot you in the foot, and if you'd have just had that conversation, the GM would have steered you away from that.
Although it sounds hilarious.
Is this a good time to mention that my character is deathly afraid of water?
The thing that's making me sad is all of these might be better than the campaign we're about to play. Yeah. But there is one thing that I think is really important as well, which a lot of people kind of gloss over, which is you want to make sure that everyone at the table, and of course with sort of having to factor listeners like yourselves into this, is everyone at the table okay with what you're playing? A lot of people skim past it. And honestly, you can get in some real trouble. Like, some people, just because of their upbringing, will maybe pick a character that they don't realise could be offensive and things like that, and there's no maliciousness to it, but it can cause offence. So I always try and make sure that, like, everyone's happy, and I expect everyone to tell me if they're not. And that's the thing, is that it's an important thing. It's a really important part of it, is that it's a social game, and it is a game. You know, it's not worth, like, losing friendships because someone decided to pick a slightly racy character that everyone else hated. And I think that's really, really important. If there's one thing that people took away, it'd be that's the thing that people tend to skip. And I think, arguably, it's the thing that could matter most, because it's the difference between your group actually playing and having a big fight, not in the fun, gamey way, and then sort of abandoning it. Cool, so that's kind of us wrapped up for the Metacast. Is there anything that anyone wants to add? Anything else? Anything that we think we missed?
I like trains.
I agree. I also like trains. Trains are pretty good.
Lydia, trains, yes or no?
I've rarely seen a train not having left London. Oh, are we talking about the character or me?
You
specifically. Oh, me. I use a lot of trains. Yeah. I like them.
Are you, so Lydia's pro train. Bryn, pro. Closing statements, pro or con trains?
Eh.
so that's the end of the train podcast. No. But yeah, that is the end of our sort of episode zero. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Like from me and everyone else here at the table.
Bye.
Bye. Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening. Everyone ready? There will be theme tunes and all that, but obviously. And now I need to edit that. Thank you so much. Right. And you all get to laugh at my presenting voice. You all ready? It's pretty much my voice. We all good?
Yeah.
Okay, welcome to episode 6. Made it so far.
Hey, we're at least already making stuff for the outtakes.
Yeah.
I hate you guys.
Outtakes!
Okay.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.